Hey everyone, this is Jamie Bateman. Real quickly, I wanted to share with you something that's been pivotal in the growth and success of my businesses, and that is my partnership with Haven Financial Services. I've been working with Haven for over a year now. Christine Valdez was on episode 70 of this podcast, so go check that out if you want to hear her story. It was a fantastic personal story for sure, but Haven has been awesome. They provide me with monthly reports that are super clear and discernible, and that provides me with clarity and focus so that I can do what I do best, which is running my businesses, not preparing financial reports. Again, if you're in the market for a top-notch financial service company, or if you just want to check one out, go to www.jamiebateman/haven and check out Haven Financial Services. Again, that's jamiebateman/haven. Can't recommend them enough. Christine and her team have been fantastic. So I definitely recommend you check out Haven Financial Services at www.jamiebateman/haven. Let's get back to the show. For any of you out there struggling with addiction or mental health challenges, this episode is for you. Dr. Rob Kelly joins us. He's an addiction expert, a neuroscience expert. He's got two PhDs and has learned a lot from his own personal situation. He had serious alcohol addiction for decades, ended up homeless. Just a wild, wild personal story of recovery. And actually, he reveals something toward the end of the episode that he apparently has only recently started talking about, which crosses into the spiritual world. So you're going to want to stick around for that. What I love is the energy and the practical nature of how he helps people recover from addiction and mental health challenges. And he's recently started working more with realtors and real estate professionals and investors and entrepreneurs. And this, I feel like we could have done 5 to 10 episodes. There's so much to unpack here. He says he has a 97% success rate. So clearly focused on results and not just talk and theory. Rob is also a renowned musician, and he's played bass guitar at Abbey Studio with Queen, David Bowie, and Elton John. Definitely runs in some cool circles and some powerful and successful circles, different celebrities, etc. But just his passion for helping people comes through in this episode for sure. You're not going to want to miss this one.
Welcome to the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. Are you an entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur? Then this show is for you. Each week, we bring you impactful stories of real people who have overcome painful human adversity to create a life of abundance. A life of abundance. You are not alone in your struggle. Join us, and you will experience the power of true stories and gain practical knowledge from founders who have turned poverty into prosperity and weakness into wealth. This podcast will encourage you through your health, relationship, and financial challenges so you can become the hero in your quest for freedom. Take ownership of the life you are destined to live. Turn your adversity into abundance.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm thrilled today to have with us Dr. Rob Kelly. Rob is a neuroscience expert and works a lot with real estate investors, real estate agents, entrepreneurs, and this is going to be awesome. This is going to be a lot of fun. Dr. Rob Kelly, how are you doing today, sir?
You're amazing, Jamie. Thank you for having me. Hey, guys, great to see you. Hang on to your seats, guys. This is going to be awesome.
I love it. Yeah. Some guests have to get me more fired up, and that's what's happening now. So this is going to be fantastic. So for the listener who may be unfamiliar with you, what are you up to today? Who are you working with, and what are you up to today?
Well, I own the Rob Kelly Group, other 5 businesses, but that's mainly what it is. It's all about neuroscience and reprogramming brains pertaining to success. We used to be an addiction company because I suffered from addiction, but 95% of our work now is purely changing mindsets pertaining to business. And we've just broke into the real estate business because we found so many people within like a year or 2 years, like this, 79% or something leave the industry. So we're all about anybody can change to make sure you're successful. Whatever that means, it doesn't mean it's easy to earn $1 million when this is right, believe it or not. But you might want to be the best father or best husband, you know. Mm-hmm. Success for you is what we concentrate on.
Sure. No, that's awesome. So before we jump into your backstory, Rob, what, I guess, you know, neuroscience versus, you know, mental health, mental fitness, can you frame the, put us, give us a little bit of context? What's the difference and how do those kind of play together?
Well, you've heard mind over matter, the brain runs from the mind, you know, so whatever we make our mind to do with the right training and reprogramming, we can do. Mental health, we deal with mental health. It's more about depression, addiction, bipolar, stuff like that. But we believe there are a few things you can do to improve anything that you're suffering from, unless you have a brain damage or something like that. But most people, when it comes to both of those, suffer from childhood trauma. And what we do here, suffer from childhood trauma, affects us here. So it's all about clearing this up and going forward. I mean, anybody can succeed. And the first thing people said to me, Jamie, years ago is, I can't be president of the United States when I say you can do anything. So forget your political views for a second. We had a business around the country. Don't dare tell me that you can't change because it's 100% possible and stay there.
Mm, I love that. Awesome. Well, I just think this is such a valuable topic, an important topic right now for numerous reasons. But our listeners are primarily entrepreneurs, and I shouldn't say but, and our listeners are primarily entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs. And, you know, with everyone working, many people working from home these days, I think it's easy to get sucked into the loneliness and you know, some negative mental habits. So I'm thrilled to get into this. So let's jump back though, Rob. What's our launching point here with your backstory? Where do we want to start?
Well, when you look at self-sabotage, which 100% of people suffer from, and childhood trauma, 100% of people suffer from. I took my first drink of alcohol at the age of 9 on stage with my musical family, my auntie and uncle. So the self-sabotage came there. You know, I was always told that I can't do things. I was always told I was not good enough. The only thing I had in my life was music. That's all I had. So when I put a guitar on my neck, I became confident. Take it away, I didn't. Because I was always told that you can't go to college, Rob. You're not as clever as your brother. You're too stupid to do that. I was told that all my life. And what happens is throughout my life, you can see the self-sabotage with alcohol and drugs and behavior. You know, behavior and mindset are just as damaging as any addiction in the world because it ends up me not believing me. And that internal voice throughout my life was saying, well, they must be right. You know, my parents told me they must be right. My friends tell me they must be right. So as we go through the journey, I finally self-sabotaged enough to lose my children, houses, car, kids, everything, and became homeless. And I knew when I became homeless, 14 months on the streets, that if I ever got off, because you look at the statistics where I come from, and 98% of people that end up really homeless like me die on the streets. So I was one of 2% that got off. And the training that I did, I have 2 PhDs, one in psychology, one in behavioral science, a bunch of all other stuff pertaining to entrepreneurs and success, is I'm going to spend the rest of my life reprogramming people, because I knew that what I was suffering from, nobody had any idea. And the more we studied the brain and the mind, central nervous system, what life's really about and how real you can get successful. It's not a dream. It's not something that you think is something that
is practical.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can actually take action with it. And actually it's not some woo-woo, like, you know, topic we talk about for other people. It's something we can implement. Sounds like right away. So first drink at age 9 on the stage. What, give us some more context of what your life was like at that time and why you took a drink at age 9.
Well, I didn't know then, but I know now there's alcoholism and addiction in the family. You can trace it back through generations. Big difference between heavy drinking, abusing alcohol, and the alcoholic. We have different minds. 3 parts of the brain differ from any. So I started playing guitar around 4. of five because my uncle was a guitar player and he lived with us. So I always knew I wanted to be a professional musician from the age of eight or nine. So first age of nine, I was at school, I was doing okay. I wasn't doing amazing. But in music, obviously, studies, I excelled, you know, A plus every single time because I loved it. The only thing I would say, and Michael Jackson reminds me of this, is during my week, I didn't get a normal lifestyle because we're rehearsing songs for the weekend. There had to be at least three new songs. So I missed out on Black Sabbath and Zeppelin all them days because I was concentrating on the three songs that we had to play for the weekend. So part of my childhood was stolen. You know, I never really thought to do things to be successful. So I was the richest kid in our school. I know that. But I was hiding behind the music all of the time. Didn't really make any good friends and social behavior wasn't perfect. So that's how it was around that age group.
So you had... You said you were the richest kid in the school, you said, right?
Yes.
And so it wasn't a financial struggle that you were dealing with. It sounds like you didn't have the best support from a family perspective and you didn't have positive, you know, dialogue or words being spoken into your life. And so interesting. So I don't mean to, you know, drill in too far on the relationship side, but so your parents and your family members all spoke poorly of your possibilities of success and what was that like?
Well, not only that, but they never validated or approved me whenever I was a bodybuilder when I was 15, 16, won a few competitions, but every time I bring this huge trophy on, my dad was just, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, good job, but nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so everybody needs a validation and approval from caregivers, otherwise it will. So that's the kind of problem. Now, we all had food in the house. The house was spotless, but it was paycheck to paycheck just about with us. So what I learned at that being from a measurement and learned behavior was I would probably go on to live paycheck to paycheck to the learned behavior. But I decided at one point that that was not going to be the case. I was going to do stuff that nobody else could do and as quick as I could.
Okay. So you did struggle from financial challenges at home. Yeah, got it.
I used to get paid, I don't know how much back in the day, £5 every night. So I, you know, 10, 20, 40, £40 a month. Well, my dad was probably earning £120 a month. It was my money. I was the richest kid in our school, but my family.
Yeah, I see. I got it. Got it. Understood. All right. So music was your calling at that point and you were, and was your, I guess, emotional and mental escape maybe. Is that fair to say?
100%.
Okay. All right. So, and you were really good at music, really good at guitar. You wanted to be a professional musician. And so first drink at age nine, because that was kind of the world that you were living in and alcohol then became an escape for you. Is that what occurred?
My uncle gave my first beer. We'd gone on stage for the first 30 minutes. We did two 30 minute spots. When I come up, I was so nervous. The crowd was so big. And he said, here, take this and drink it real quick, which I did right there, and it changed my whole life. My confidence about everything. So I used that as a crutch throughout the rest 25 years.
Okay, so, and obviously there's going to be a ton of ups and downs we're not going to be able to really drill into, but next 25 years, walk us through, you know, from age nine for 25 years, walk us through some of the ups and downs and chronologically, how did things play out for you?
Well, when I was playing, like, the next move to high school, I did okay again in high school, again, music, and then just getting bands and stuff like that. And I took up bodybuilding. I used to, you know, work the doors or play in a band at the weekend, no matter what I did during the week. And it became just a life habit of mine to do that. When I was about 15, 16, a friend of mine, his father was a Freemason, and he's very secretive over in England, not like it is here. They were for an organist. They were all old. The lodge had been going for many years. And eventually, they had no other choice but to ask me. So I was about 16, maybe 17. So to become a Freemason, you have to go through a ritual, which I had to do to get me in the lodge to play the organ. So that was my first entrance into who you know, not what you know. From that and talks and likability, I got a place at Oxford University through the back door. So I end up at this prestigious school, not knowing how to act. So then the imposter syndrome sunk in. And he's kind of in life feeling that I remember the first time, Jenny, we sat down for lunch at college. There were five forks on the left hand, five forks on the right hand. I was like, are we going to have five meals? Or what? I freaked out. So what I got to learn at an early age, Jenny, was to look at other people and copy what they do. And that's exactly what I did throughout my life, because today I have an amazing life mixing with all these millionaires, if not billionaires. But it all comes from learning, you know, copy what people do until you know how to do it.
Yeah. All right. So you did okay in high school, and then you had some good connections to get you into Oxford, yes. Right? And then so now all of a sudden you're in with all these people who maybe you're thinking they earned it more than you did, right? Okay, so what's your mindset at Oxford? Give us some more context about Oxford.
Well, I'd love to give you the in-depth kind of, but all of the time there I was drunk every day. But that's the reality of it. You know, I couldn't stand the pressure. I was just now I was into drinking every day, so which wasn't a problem, obviously. So there was a few people paid off to do a few things. I don't mind sharing that.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
I paid people, other school kids, because I was playing in the band. I had lots of money. I paid other kids to take tests, to do papers.
Got it.
Like that. You know, I would stay up studying until, I don't know what time. I'd get home about 11, 12 o'clock, take a bunch of amphetamines, stay up till 5. And then, it was a crazy time. It was a real, it's foggy. The whole drinking time for me towards the end was just foggy. But I knew that, you know, the first contact I had, these people were affluent. And that's what I knew I needed to be. I don't need to be with, you know, the people that I grew up with. And I chose for that because I wanted this lifestyle that I'm seeing around where, you know, parents are picking kids up in Rolls Royces and Bentleys. And I'm like, I want some of that lifestyle. And I get some of that lifestyle.
Yeah. Okay. So somehow you end up homeless. Walk us up to that point.
So after going to college, after, you know, meeting a girl, you know, getting married, buying our first house, having the first child, which I swore in the Bible I'd never drink again after the first child that was there at birth. 2 hours later, I'm drunk, still didn't think I had a problem. Second child came along, same thing with two Bibles now, because I'm being serious. You know, worst 3 hours of my life because I was drunk in 3 hours. So that was the deal. A lot of bad things happened in that house. I remember stabbing my wife 3 times one night because she won't let me finish my bottle of vodka. That's the one I can tell you. There's lots of other things that happened in a dysfunctional house, you know, that went on. But eventually, you know, she left with the children. And, you know, over a 2 or 3, 4 months, everything was gone. You know, it was a blur. But I wake up on the streets one day and think, where did it all go wrong? And everybody is disowned me, friends, family, brothers, sisters. Every time I call them, they put the phone down. If I turned up to the house, they call the police. So I was abandoned on the streets, absolutely abandoned. And I tried to kill myself 7 times, and on 2 occasions it worked. I was dead. And they brought me back to life on a smelly, rainy, old Manchester road twice. And I hated them men for that, Jamie, because I didn't come in. I was done. I tried jumping on buildings. I tried tying myself to a railway track. I tried overdose. It was just, it's like I couldn't kill myself. I could try all these things.
Wow.
Niggling in the back, Jamie, niggling through all this poverty, shame, homelessness, begging, oh, just horrible. I knew that one day I'd be where I am today.
So you say you were legally dead twice. Walk us, pick one of those 2 times. And I'm sure, like you said, it's all blur and it's hard to remember, but give us some context if you don't mind touching on that a little bit.
I took a load of pills. And I drank myself almost to death, you know, drinking handle bottles of vodka with pills, and then I collapsed on the side where I thought nobody would find me. But before I went unconscious, there was some party goers there, and it came along, you okay? And by then I'd had too many drugs and too much alcohol. I had alcohol poisoning, and it kicked over, and my heart stopped there. And there were people who had already called the ambulance, and they were there within seconds. Because the city center, and they brought me back, you know, doing the compressions, and I remember waking up And but there was loads of stuff like that. I remember waking up in what I thought was heaven, because there was three people around me with white uniforms on, with white hats, white uniform. I thought I was dead. I was so relieved. I was like, it was a hospital. And the nurses wore the whites back in the day with the hat. When I found out it was a hospital and I hadn't died, I went into a depressive state straight away.
Wow. What age was this?
Oh, I don't know. 21, 22, 23, around
that. Sure. Early 20s. Okay, so what was that rock bottom for you? What was rock bottom?
Well, two rock bottoms. When the authorities took their children off me, because I'd been drunk for 2 days, they were in my care, and I was out drinking, back to the house, back to the liquor store, and the children not being fed for 2 days or changed diapers, and the police kicked the door down. As they pull my 1 and 3 year old out, my 3 year old holding mom's hands went down the path, and she said three things to me: "Daddy, daddy, please don't go. Daddy, daddy, please get better." And when they got to the gate and opened the gate, she turned around one more time and says, "Daddy, daddy, please stop drinking." And I couldn't do it. So a couple of months, if not weeks later, I was homeless. But the other one was one night, it was pouring down with rain, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I dropped down to my hands and knees. And I just looked up to the sky in the rain and I said, if there's a God up there, I can't do this on my own anymore. Maybe 30 seconds later, it felt like a guy walked around the corner, Mrs. Lesbos home from Bible study, took a shortcut for the first time ever and came upon me. That is where my whole life changed. Because he took me back to his house, you know, and he bathed and clothed. And yeah, from then on, I really never looked back. And his name was Derek. I also met a guy called John who took me through the program, philosophy, Bible, all that stuff. And that's covered from that disease.
Okay, so your family and relatives had all abandoned you or decided they couldn't, they had to create separation. And but a stranger came to your rescue. Is that right?
Yes. My parents, completely. And rightly so, I want to say. Rightly so. Apparently, my mom died earlier with cancer for worrying about me. She told me years on that she prayed that the police would knock on the door and tell them I had passed away so she could stop worrying about me. Because I caused mayhem. Everyone around me, I caused mayhem. And never
mind. So, yeah, this is a lot of heavy stuff, and I don't mean to just gloss over this. I appreciate you sharing, being open with us. So someone brings you into his home. Walk us through the next year or two. What did that look like?
Well, the next bit I would only share about 18 months ago. I kept it to myself for 20 something years. He went back to his house and he said, listen, you can stay here for as long as you want, but you have to come to these AA meetings and alcoholic and recovery. Well, I hated them meetings, but I went. When I went, I looked around and people started sharing and stuff like that. And this guy said, my name's John, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I was like, well, what did he just say? You can't be recovered from this. So after the meeting, I went over to him. Will you be my sponsor? He said, no, but I'll be your spiritual advisor for a period of 12 weeks. Every single Wednesday, I'd walk around to his house. I was an hour away. I used to walk there, spend 7 till 8 p.m. with him. I had to be there dead on 7, leave dead on 8, and walk back to the house. I did that for 12 weeks, Jamie. So he told me life would change. When the next day, after my final day, I got a part-time job, which was crazy. Led to a full-time job. So I bought him a little teddy bear and a card from the gas station, and I walked back to his apartment. When I got to the apartment, it looked like there was nobody there. I was knocking on the door real hard, and then right-hand neighbor come out and says, can I help you? And he said, yeah, can you tell me where John's moved to? She said, John, there's been no one there for 3 months that I've lived here. So I let her close the door, obviously. So I knocked on the other door, and this big guy came to the door. What do you want? Where's John moved to? Where's he relocated to? And he said, John who? I said, your neighbor, John. And he said, I don't know where you're playing at. That house is derelict. That apartment's derelict. In fact, all fact, there's no floor in there. You step in, you drop down. Don't be so stupid. You've got the wrong address. So then I went back to the meeting the night after. And Rob. I said, oh, you recognize me? Because I only went there once. Yeah. I said, does John still come here? And they said, John who? I said, John, the guy I'm over near the coffee machine, we're talking about going sponsoring me and stuff. And he said, well, we were laughing because we thought you'd found God because you were over near the coffee machine speaking to yourself. We never found that man. And I set when I got wealthy, I set a detective agency back in England on him, and they could never trace him. But what he taught me is why I'm where I am today.
So who do you believe, who was John? What do you believe that was?
Okay, so first of all, I never told anybody, didn't even think about it, kind of scared a little bit. And then it's some kind of spiritual intervention or divine, because an angel. Because many times after that, miracles every couple of months happened to me. Like, you know, doctor overdosed me once with pain meds because I had a back injury. Somebody found me. I was just, there's loads of stuff that happened to me and continues to happen to me. So people started getting well and people started to succeed. And, you know, the medical fraternity scowled on me and, you know, said I was this, you know, hobo that had this magical mystery thing that, but eventually, you know.
So you didn't share the story about John for 20 years, you said, right?
Yeah, correct.
Because you were worried about being viewed as a
crazy. Nobody's going to believe that.
Yeah.
Nobody's
so
going
to. So what do you say to someone who says, well, that was, you know, this guy was on drugs and was maybe having a psychotic episode?
Just because the time I spent with Derek in his house, you know, I spent a long time there and I ended up working with him at the factory or sweeping floors. So, and the things that he said would come true, that was kind of mind blowing. He said, God won't keep you here, but will send you to a land far away. And he quoted a Bible verse. I'm not a Bible guy. And all little things came true. So I knew it was real for me. And I got sober when I left his house after the last day of 12 months. And I just get better and better. But I still hear him, some of the stuff he tells me today, like a second voice telling me or guiding me, or, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. And we've seen that.
Angel on your shoulder kind of thing, right?
I think so. I don't think so. I know, you know, it's the first time I've said it on a podcast. I know that's exactly what it is. And I, you know, I don't really care what people say, but, you know, that's
Bruce. Well, I personally, I do, I was actually just speaking about this a couple of days ago, that I do think, you know, certainly in the U.S. and just the Western culture, we tend to minimize the spiritual world, you know, in general. So I don't think it's crazy to acknowledge that there is a spiritual world and that world can cross over into our world. So bring us up to date. So the last, say, 5 or 10 years of your life, what did that look like?
Well, I met my wife 10 years ago in Dallas, Texas, because I came over here for 2 weeks, just like John told me I would. And I've stayed here for about 18, 19 years now. I met my girlfriend. I'd come out of the industry. I was driving a truck, happy as anything. Met my girlfriend, and we got a phone call one day from a treatment center, and they called me Dr. Rob on the phone. I'm like, wow, I've not heard that for ages. So that phone call changed again. Me and my wife have built, you know, 5 businesses around us, being happy, being successful. And the key is, here's the key. So when you have that spiritual awakening, because there is a spiritual side to this, you know, believe me, and you have that rewiring of the brain, then our DNA changes. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, from a training, practicing, research and tests and trials and stuff like that. You know, we did this in a scientific lab. We want to do exactly that. You know, it's not about alcohol and drugs today, because the mindset is all the same. You know, I have distorted thinking. So most alcoholics, not alcoholics are born, drug addicts are made. Most alcoholics, when get sober, are geniuses. They really are, because of the mind and the way the pathways work. So the hypothalamus, basal ganglia, and the amygdala are different. And all alcoholics to any other addiction in the world.
And now, are you saying that's why you were drawn to alcoholism? Because you were born that way, or are you saying because of the alcoholism, you now became a genius?
Well, what we found is when we've been working with, you know, I've worked with over 8,000 people now. When we started working with alcoholics, when they got sober, they had mental compliance. You know, because they're open, they struggle with disease, and the same to a certain degree with any other addiction. We struggle with this disease, and most of our neural pathways in the head are self-sabotaging. So we can't reject the basal ganglia, our repetition, strength, and confirmed part of the brain, like a pilot needs 10,000 hours in the air. Can you imagine, like, face, then what alcoholics and addicts do is 10 after they get sober, 20 after they get the kids back, get the job back, and about 10 should be self-sabotage. That is ingrained from birth. That is the self-sabotage. Add childhood trauma to that and the access to alcohol, and I never stood a chance. I was on a ticket. But once you get clean and sober, every person I've worked with gone on to get clean.
And you think it's in large part also due to just that recovery process, the work you put in during the recovery and the growth in that time period?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all alcoholics and addicts or any other addiction get two lives in one lifetime. You get the first time we messed up. We were blessed enough to get sober, clean, come off gambling, sex, whatever it is. And we have this second life. I have a carefree attitude. I signed an office deal in Dallas some 10 years ago for $1 million over a period of time. I did not have $1 million, Jamie. I probably had about $8,000 in the bank, but I signed this deal. And my friend said, how do you sleep at night? And my attitude is always, what the hell can they do to me that I haven't already done to myself? Nothing. But we take that entrepreneur path. We build empires. My guys don't build businesses. You get a business card and a website. I go, no, build empires. Stop putting bricks on your imagination, because it was always meant to be.
Sounds like you're pretty passionate about the self-limiting beliefs.
100%. From learned behavior. All from learned behavior and investment from caregivers. It all comes from that. If dad's a gas fitter, you'll probably be a gas fitter. If dad's successful, you'll probably be successful. But you can break that chain. You really can, of getting away. I call it, my old friends were like a cesspit. They kept trying to bring me back, but I was gone. I knew that I even when I was sick on the street, I knew there was a better life. And I knew that the experience I was going through was going to become my greatest asset going forward. It's like, where I was and look where. Well, I can't do it. I'm 42 years old. No, from there to there. Well, what about recently? Well, recently I've just lost 155 pounds in the last 18 months. Again, mindset, neuroscience. You can do anything that you put your mind to.
Wow. Well, that's what the show is all about, from adversity to abundance, and turning those struggles into success stories and strength. Two PhDs. When did you get those?
I got my first one, I was at Oxford, in psychology. And then about 8 years ago, I did an online course with another university in England, Southampton. I got another online PhD for behavioral science, because I wanted to do, when Zoom first came out some 9 or 10 years ago, I wanted to be able to work on Zoom with people around the world. But I needed to understand the science around behavior, the 3,000 micro expressions on the face alone. So I can tell if you're lying, if you're hiding something, if your shoulders, I can tell all of this on a screen.
So what's one or two things that I guess you've learned through your academic education? Because I know you've had a lot of real life education, but from the academic side, from your PhDs, one or two things that stand out that the world really needs to know that is not among the common understanding of neuroscience or life.
Well, obviously the psychology, all about the mind, the brain and how it works, and what's actually going on in the brain. The neuroscience is what change does. The neuroscience behind what's really going on. Like, everyone thinks in the morning, like you get up in the morning, the brain, the mind, you can program your mind as soon as you get up. I'm going to give you three things to do every morning, guys, before we finish, and you'll feel amazing the next day or the same day. So when you look at the mind, so what happens is this mind is energy, as we all know, it connects with an energy, but we can make our mind up. Mind over matter, the brain is matter. Once we program that mind first thing in the morning, it can spread into neural pathways and different parts of the brain to make sure that you have a fantastic day and make sure that you can chase your dream and it can come real. See, most people come home from work and they go, oh, do you know what? I had a bad day today. My answer is always the same. Was it a bad day, or was it 5 minutes that was bad and you spread it across the day? So the fascination of the mind and the brain became obsessive with me. And we still don't know about 80% of what's going on in there. This always happens. Always happens, unless somebody gets up one day and goes, you know something? I don't want to do this anymore. Obviously, self-sabotage. But a lot of our childhood, We will stock them. So we got 1,000 fleas. We stuck them in a jar, an experiment in a lab. We punched holes. After a day or two, we took the cap off. Now, fleas can jump 3 or 4 foot. Not one flea jumped higher than where the cap was. Okay, so we're talking about learned behavior. Mm. We thought that was interesting, but what we found was real interesting is the babies they had in that jar still wouldn't jump higher than the lid. Never seen the lid. So we look at, whenever we look at human behavior around that, it's like we're only going to go as far as our parents teach us to go. Mm. Really, we should be. Most people are walking around 45 if 50% of their capability and capacity.
So that's not even, that's learned behavior, but it's not self-limiting in that case. It's almost parent-limiting.
It is. I mean, you know, I can't even, we can sit here from now till next week, constantly 24 hours, and I still won't cover and convince you.
Yeah. Well, no, it's, I feel like we could have 10 episodes with and barely scratch the surface. So I've shared a little bit of this on previous episodes recently, but and I won't go into too much detail, but we've dealt with, particularly with my son recently in the last 12 to 18 months, some very serious mental health challenges. And so I've personally been a lot more interested in mental fitness, mental health, and the intersection between physical health and spiritual health and mental health and all these things. I think one of the things that's surfaced for me with my understanding of all of this is, well, first off, the there's a huge gap between in the US in our medical system with regard to mental health, neurology, and sort of the physical side and the mental side. So there's a book called Brain Energy that he argues, I think his name is Dr. Chris Palmer, if I get it right, but he argues that everything is, everything comes back to the mitochondria. And so whether we're talking about diabetes or whether we're talking about bipolar disorder, that there's a connection, you know, there, and that his thing is he's trying to change the system. He's not that he's not trying to help a particular individual in their situation, but he's trying to, you know, change the entire system and how we look at this. So I'll stop rambling and let you chime in, but what would you say to, you know, our approach as a Western society in addressing, I guess, mental health and brain issues? What's the biggest need with regard to our approach as a system?
Oxygen.
Oxygen.
So the presence of oxygen equals a lack of disease. But that becomes mental health. We only breathe 25% of our lung capacity. Therefore, our body does not get the 100% oxygen that's needed. So every illness, every disease grows in a hypoxic area of the body. That's number one. Okay. Second, the more you believe the people around you, it changes cells, it changes the biochemistry in the brain. I mean, it's a mirroring part of the brain that takes it on, like monkey see, monkey do, you know, and you can use your whole body. So let's say the head, 300-ish neuropathways die every day. What are you replacing them 300 with? Replace them with the same old stuff, the mundane stuff around people that don't want you to succeed, or are you replacing them with people around you that want more than them for you? They want something for you, not from you. Then the people that believe in you more than I believe in myself, it changes inside, it changes the chemistry, you know, it changes the pathways, the hypothalamus, basal ganglia, prefrontal cortex, the amygdala. It changes from the people are surrounding. That's why it's really important about your inner circle. If you've got more than three people, it's too many. Too many. No, because people, 99 people can say you're amazing, one person say no. All this is changing you on a daily basis. Now, and if you don't think it works, guys, listen, next time you're out in a built-up area with people, find somebody with sneakers on, always the best. Nice sneakers, man. Three words. Okay, nice sneakers, man. Hey, oh, thank you, man. Watch him when he walks away. He's going to look down at his feet at least two or three times. Now he's in a great mood, goes on to the wife, because he's in a great mood. So this, pass this on generation to generation, right now with people and people and people. That changes our chemistry. Dopamine's released in our brain straight away. We love dopamine. And all the other got the oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins. Now, all four chemicals are needed to change. All four chemicals are needed to be happy every day. You can't have a bad day while following this. But what you have to remember is dopamine and serotonin are created in the gut, not the brain.
In the thoughts. Okay. Yeah.
We don't know what we're supposed to eat. We eat crap. We make hamburgers. We do all this stuff. You go to the store now and you pull something up the shelf. Look at the ingredients.
Yeah.
Like, you go out to England, McDonald's fries. They're not great for you. English, three ingredients. Oil, salt, potato. You do the same fries over here from McDonald's, there's 17 ingredients in that.
Yeah, we have very, very ultra processed. Our diet is pretty poor in the US. So talk to the entrepreneur as we start to, you know, in a minute here, I've got some rapid fire questions and then we'll talk more about really what you're up to today with your businesses. But before we get there, talk to the entrepreneur out there who works from home and they might be busy, but they're isolated and lonely and feeling, you know, I'm not even saying depressed, just maybe overweight, maybe lethargic, maybe how do they break through? You talk about most people are operating at 45-50% of their capacity. What are some practical tips? I know you mentioned three things you were going to mention. What's a practical tip or two that the entrepreneur at home who doesn't get out much, what can they do today to get to that next level?
So guys, I've been there. It's lonely. Isolation kills people or sends them insane. So we need the chemicals in the brain so that we can communicate with other people. You know, I have 5,000 friends. No, you're plugged into the wall on Facebook. That's all you are. These are the tricks I've worked with my 8,000 patients with that all works. If you find yourself working from home and getting mundane, shower, dress for the office, a suit, a tie, whatever it is, walk into your office upstairs, you work for a amount of hours and then you leave. Stop doing 1,000 things at once and not being successful at one. Write 5 things down every day that you're going to complete. Now, you may do 50, but these 5 you must complete. And don't do anything stupid like win the lottery. Just start with breakfast, lunch, call Johnny, da-da-da, whatever. Start with them 5. If you continue them 5 every day, your brain is in the subconscious brain. That's where the prefrontal cortex asks for problems because the conscious brain is working, guys, because you're not clear this up. You know, so you have to start believing that whatever you want, you want. Write down on a whiteboard the things that you want to accomplish. And don't sell yourself short, okay? And make sure that you call people, text people on a daily basis, and you need to get out, guys. I don't care if it's a walk in the park for 20 minutes. You need to get out of that office and that house, especially if you're single, because you will not perform 100%. You will not. So tomorrow morning, get up in the morning. Mm. The reason why no human being ever has woke up laughing is because of lack of oxygen. So on a normal circadian rhythm sleep pattern between 2 and 4, our body's at most repair. It's also when most people die of natural causes. Mm. So when we wake up, we need to replenish the oxygen. So stand up, grab it. Before you do anything, guys, grab hold of the bed because you will go dizzy. And I want you to take 20 exaggerated breaths in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And times, guys, hold on. Now the oxygen has flooded the brain. Mm-hmm. Now we're ready. Go into the bathroom. Let's talk to the subconscious brain. Look yourself in the mirror, but from 6 feet away. When you go close to the mirror while shaving and putting your makeup on, you see all your blemishes. You walk out the door or get on Zoom thinking about them blemishes. Stand 6 feet away and all the blemishes go. Okay, so let's check your pathways. If you brush with right, left for a week, right for a week, left for a week, right for a week. Go out, compliment 3 people, or if you're at home, compliment 3 people by text or phone or on Zoom, and then stop believing that you can. Once you start acting as if you are, then you become. Like we talk on you guys to the 9/11 cars, to the big million-dollar houses, because what happens, the brain is not primed for success. Mm. So when you start earning money, go and buy that 9/11, the mind doesn't go, oh, hang on a sec, that's a lot. What the brain says is, oh, I recognize this place. This is where I belong. All these little tricks to do, and you will flourish, guys. And don't ever hang around people that don't believe you can. They've got to believe more than you believe. The mirroring part of the brain and the energy will pick that up is 100% guaranteed.
All right, so the 3 things that people can do in the morning is the breath work. right? And then two is the standing 6 feet away from the mirror. And you
I love you.
mentioned,
I love you. I love you 10
yeah,
times.
okay. And then you mentioned brushing your teeth with different hands. And then the third thing, though, is the compliments for other people, right?
Yes. But we've
Okay.
got to listen to that. If you're working from home, be careful with your dialogue, guys, internal and external. You know, I drop a pen on the floor. Oh, stupid idiot. Stop that and stop it
Yeah,
now.
the self-talk. So that's really interesting, and we're almost out of time here. But I've actually been doing breath work almost every morning for the last year, 14 months, and it's been amazing. I really never thought I would do anything like breath work, and it's really sets the tone for the day. It's been fantastic. And then when you mentioned the texting or complimenting people, my wife and I did some counseling. A couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, and one of the very practical things that our therapist had us do was sending appreciations to each other. It might sound cheesy, or it might sound too simple, and too, you know. I had some doubts in the beginning, to be honest with you. What is this text going to do? I mean, great. Well, it changes your mindset, like you're talking about. It changed me more than it changed her, as far as when I'm sending these appreciations to her, because it's taught my brain to start looking for that. And because, our brains naturally focus on the negative. And so those two of those three things I can truly appreciate is now I guess I gotta get better at the mirror self-talk. But we're almost out of time here. You want to say chime in?
Just dress for each other as well at home. If you're married, you need to dress. Don't walk around with a bag of shorts and then dress for each other every day. Me and
I
my
like
wife,
that.
it's amazing.
Awesome. That's a great tip. All right, you ready for some rapid fire questions, Rob?
So,
All right. What is one thing that people misunderstand about you?
that I'm passionate, I have a big heart, and I give a lot of money away without people knowing. They would. It's unbelievable, but most people think I'm aggressive and no, I'm not
Hmm.
telling you.
Got it. We've talked a lot about your story is amazing. You've had some very real low points. What's one of your biggest failures?
My daughters, one of them got in touch 4 years ago. She now works for me in England. But the other one, Jamie, that I've not seen for almost 30 years, got in contact with me yesterday by email.
Wow, it's amazing. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
Nobody gives a shit. We think they do, but they don't. Say, like I walk in a room like you're all looking at. No, no one's looking. Nobody cares. So be bold. Dance where you can. Wear stupid slippers. Whatever you got to do.
Yeah, I just saw a thread on Twitter or X today from I think it's his name, Mark Manson, I think. He's the Subtle Art of Not Giving an F
Yeah.
author. It's so true. If you could have a coffee with any historical figure, who would you choose?
Now, this is controversial when people ask me this, but dig deep with me, guys. I'm going to say Hitler. And the reason why I hate him and all that stuff, how did he get millions of people to follow him?
Sure.
That's
Yeah,
all.
great
Really
question.
horrible. But how
Great
did he do it?
question.
Nobody.
If you were given $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with it?
I'd give 9 million away and I'd keep 1 million just in case the 9 million wasn't enough.
All right, Dr. Rob Kelly, what is one challenge that you're facing in your business right now?
Just patient time for patients. That's all it is. I only take on 4 patients every 3 months, although the company takes on, 50, but just time. I wish I had more time to give to people.
And I'm going to circle back to your business here in a minute, but what is a book or two that you could recommend for our
Oh,
listener?
obviously, Gabby, Please Stop Drinking. That's my book on Amazon. If you don't like it, I'll refund you $9.
What was the name of it again?
Gabby, Please Stop Drinking.
Got it.
What my daughter said to me last, and I said, of course, the Four Agreements.
Awesome. Let's talk about your business. Who's your ideal client? How do you work with them?
Usually, somebody's lost their way and wants to get back. That's about it, really. Obviously, to see me costs a lot of money. Just because we have a 97% success rate, and we guarantee they're giving you money back if it doesn't work. So, yeah, robkelly.com, the website, 2 Bs, Robkelly. Go and have fun. We don't need your work. We don't need your money. We don't need your services. Go and have fun, guys.
Now you also mentioned to me before, it's at neurorealtypartners.com. You want to mention that?
Yeah, it's a new conference online, guys, via Zoom. We're teaching realtors how to be a success in the first year rather than 79% pack in and leave the industry. So we guarantee that as well. Otherwise, we'll give you your money back. We guarantee everything that we do. Take your realty business from zero to $1 million in the first year by changing the mindset and changing the behavior around what you say and do today.
That's a really unique approach. I mean, there's plenty of information out there for realtors on how to run their real estate business, right? How to get clients or, sell a house. But that's the first for me as far as this the neuro approach to becoming a successful agent. I love that. What is one thing that we haven't touched on, Rob, that you'd like to?
Just the looking after yourself, guys. You really have to look after and love others. I mean, it's such a corny line, but when you love others, then you love yourself. And by loving yourself, you can be the best person that's possible. Why settle for 45% when you can get to 100% and enjoy life?
Love that. That's fantastic. Well, yeah, like I said, we could probably have 10 episodes with your story right now. This is, I mean, there were so many little rabbit holes that I did not go down that I wanted to. So the story, yeah, I've said this to other guests. I'm sorry you had to go through so much pain and adversity, but I am thankful that you're giving back so much, and that you're clearly a positive force in the world out there. And thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Rob Kelly. This has been great.
I'm Jamie.
And to the listener, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Don't forget to check out our website, adversity2abundance.com. That's the number two, adversity2abundance.com. And we do appreciate reviews. And if you could share the show with someone, that would be fantastic. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, your time. If you like the show, please share it with your friends and fellow podcast listeners. One entrepreneur at a time, we can change the world. See you next time.
Hey there, it's Jamie Bateman. Ever felt boxed in by life's challenges? Dive into my new book, From Adversity to Abundance, Inspiring Stories of Mental, Physical, and Financial Transformation, available now on Amazon. From a former bank robber's redemption to a young entrepreneur's victory over hurdles, these stories are not just inspiration. They're the roadmaps to your transformation. Whether for you or as a powerful gift to friends and family, especially those who might not tune into podcasts, this book is a beacon to a life of abundance. Ignite that inner fire and set your course to the life you've imagined. Purchase yours today on Amazon and light the path for someone you love.